to the Gym Podcast. Uncut, unfiltered, unreal.
Welcome everyone to the Gym Podcast. Welcome folks. I'm your host, Jim Fisher. Joining me this week, as always, is the one, the only, Randy Darsh.
Hello, everybody. I am excited. Once again, we have the playoffs coming up. We actually have a shorter episode because we covered the playoffs last episode, but we'll still talk about them, and we'll talk about some random topics in the remaining upcoming bowl games. But first, we actually have some coaching carousel things happen, surprisingly. So, Kyle Whittingham, the former longtime Utah head coach, is now the head coach at Michigan. And this really surprised me. I think it's a great hire, but it just is weird. I thought he retired and was done with the game. He's been there forever. But, like, it surprises me because I feel like for this to not surprise me, we would have need to see a nastier divorce between him and Utah. But I feel like that went weirdly super amicably.
That's the weirdest thing, honestly, is seeing the Utah fans' reactions. I've seen I hate to use the word cucked. Like, dude, every Utah fan is like, I'm so happy for him. I'll never be mad at Kyle Whittingham for all he's done for the program. We're so grateful for him. And like, to me, man, if that was me, if that was my team, that's been my team with Burt, with Gary Anderson. It is the worst feeling in the world when your coach leaves for another program. So it's been weird to see the reactions from both sides of the table here.
I think part of it is he didn't just straight up leave for Michigan. It was kind of like a mutual parting of ways.
Yeah.
It was time for it to happen, and everybody was fine with it. And then he went to Michigan. Like, he wasn't looking to go to Michigan, and then this happened.
Right.
I think that kind of makes it a little different. I can kind of understand them being okay. Like, he's an amazing coach. He's a great coach. But I think just with the situation at Utah, he's kind of hit his ceiling. Don't know how much better he can do. Don't know how motivated he is to really want to get past that ceiling. He's 66 years old.
He's
the perfect guy to go to Michigan for a couple of years, stabilize the program, make it a little bit more respectable internally, gonna get the internal things correct before he moves on, retires. So I think that's the thing.
Like, do you think that's kind of the reason they hired him over maybe a riskier coach? Like, I don't see Kyle Whittingham getting them to the playoffs. Like, I think they have, he has a pretty high, you know, a pretty clear ceiling, you know, but he is a very stable coach, like you said. And yeah, getting them to a point where, like, you know, a few years down the road, if they can move past these current controversies, like some stability, I think
they'll
really
be able to be in a position to where they can attract a high powered, riskier coach hire, like a guy they would really, really, really want. Mm-hmm. Part of it is like with his age and everything, I can also understand Utah fans probably would want one of those like younger, extremely hyper motivated, going to work a billion hours a week type of head coach. That's really going to put everything he can, pedal to the metal, just full on try to do what he can to get them over the hump. So I can kind of see that. And Kyle Whittingham, he's just too old. He's not going to do that. It is what it is.
Saban's
got a lot of talent in their backyard. They're a stable program.
I got to bring it up though. Saban was how old when he was started by Alabama?
He was 57.
Okay, never mind. That's way younger than this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny to think that Mike Shula is the same age as Saban.
It's pretty crazy. Yeah, as far as Utah goes, I didn't realize he'd been coaching there since 2004. So
yeah,
21 years.
He was the longest tenured FBS head coach at this point. I'm not actually
Ferentz,
certain
even?
On that.
I don't know.
Other than Kirk Ferentz, that's right.
We'll give him that. But yeah, it's pretty crazy to see him like this late in the game. Like, I kind of assumed he would just, you know, retire, like you were saying, and that'd be it, sort of a thing. Maybe come back a year or two later, but to just jump straight from Utah, who had a pretty good season this year, if you recall. They were what, 10-2? Yeah, 10-2. To go
we
from
are
that to
seeing,
Michigan.
We are actually seeing some crazy things. So I'm looking at the list of the top 10 longest tenured Power 4 head coaches.
Yeah.
This was from 3 months ago. So Iowa, Kirk Ferentz, he's been there since 1999. He is the longest.
Crazy.
Number two was Kyle Whittingham. His first season was 2005. And now he's no longer on the list because he swapped teams.
Yep.
Number three is Clemson's Dabo Swinney. He's been there since 2008.
Yeah.
Number four was Kentucky's Mark Stoops, 2013. He is no longer there. Tied at number four, 2013, is NC State's Dave Doran. Actually, doesn't really surprise me. Let me see if he's still the head coach.
He's still there?
Yeah, he's still the head coach. He's still there. I don't know if they got rid of him. Number six was James Franklin, no longer there.
Yeah.
Number 7, Pat Narduzzi at Pitt, starting 2015, and he's still there. Number 8, Iowa State's Matt Campbell, no longer there.
Yeah.
Number 8, BYU's Kalani Sitake, 2016.
Still there, yeah.
And he almost wasn't there. He almost got gobbled up by Penn State.
Yeah.
And then also tied for number 8 is Georgia's Kirby Smart, been there since 2016.
That's insane to me that like there's like 5 or fewer coaches who have been at their program for 10 or more years.
Yeah.
That's insane to think about, dude. You think about just how like the turnover in college football.
There's a lot of turnover. I don't even think it's necessarily like coaches just don't live up to the standard so much as they put so much time and energy in for those first few years that they either eventually, after they accomplish something, they kind of like burn out.
Yeah.
Or they just burn out in general. And then they take like a year off taking an easier coordinator job.
Yeah.
And then maybe give it another crack because they just couldn't keep up the workload and the pressure. Like it just gets to you after a while. And
no, I understand.
You start putting in bad performances and then you get fired.
And all it takes is a couple bad years and like it's very, you know, momentum based. I like Luke Fickell, dude. And it's like with Fickell, it's like I don't even know how he gets out of this bubble now because like who wants to play for this guy? You've got a bad track record. It's just it's really hard to stay consistently good. You know,
he took it easy in the beginning, so now he's really ready to ramp up the effort. And
he did take it easy. That's his problem, dude. I know, but but yeah. Speaking of
coaches that have taken easier jobs,
yeah.
To kind of just enjoy their life. They've got the money. They're done being a head coach. Chip Kelly is now the offensive coordinator at Northwestern. I'm looking at the past 3 seasons for him. He was the offensive coordinator at Ohio State for a year.
Yeah.
Then the offensive coordinator at the Raiders for a year. Now the offensive coordinator at Northwestern. And honestly, I feel like for a guy like Chip Kelly, he always hated recruiting.
Yep.
Even when he was at Oregon, when he was at UCLA, he just hated recruiting. He hated all that kind of administrative stuff, the stuff Saban loves. So I feel like this is like the perfect example of a coach. He's like, he knows what he's good at. He could be a head coach. He could be successful if he really wanted to put in the time and effort. But like, why?
Yeah.
Why bother doing that if you're happy being an offensive coordinator, happy being at these programs where you can kind of make these players' lives a little better, give them a good chance to win without really just literally killing yourself from overworking.
It is pretty insane. I feel like being a head coach in college football has to be like, I realize it's a great job and that you're getting paid tons of money to get fired, but the actual day-to-day life of these coaches, like they must be working like 16 hours a day, like every day of the year, you know?
Pretty much the ones that stay long-term head coaches, they kind of are able to structure their life in a way to where they can make it work. And like
They're addicted to it. Yeah,
they know how to organize their day to where it's not a super mega stressful, you know, however many hours a day they have to do. Yeah. Like it's stressful given the pressure of the job, but they're not constantly burning the candle at both ends.
They've got,
you know, I think we saw that.
Yeah, they scheduled out time for yoga.
Right. I look at a guy like Sharon Moore. I think he is the epitome of a guy who was burning the candle at both ends. And he kind of like lost it. And I'm not excusing what he did. Don't get me wrong. This is not excusing his behavior. But you can kind of see how a guy that's burning the candle at both ends. You hear stories about how he would scream at a coordinator about the pressure he's dealing with. And you see some of the kind of the antics he got to, the private bedroom antics he got up to. Like, you can kind of see that's the behavior of a man who's cracking under pressure.
Yeah. God. Well, Chip Kelly, though, I forgot that he was the OC at Ohio State last year, right? When they won the national title?
Was it last? I don't know if it was last year. I think he was with the Raiders last year. Let me see. Yeah, he was with the Raiders last year. He was with Ohio State in 2024, so he did not win a championship.
No, 2024 was when they won it. Oh, I'm making my year.
I thought they won it last year.
Regardless.
How about 2020? Wait, no. 2025 is this year. I was thinking that because he was with the Raiders in 2025.
Oh, that's weird.
But now he's with Northwestern. Okay, yeah, so he did win it with Ohio State. You're
crazy.
Right.
And so, like, for Northwestern, dude, I'm so jealous. Like, I think they're going to have a good offense. I mean, Chip Kelly, in my mind, is one of the best offensive minds kind of this era. Like, I get that he's not quite as good as he was in his prime, and that does sound like an unk, as the kids would say. But I'm sure you can vouch for this, Randy. Back in the day when he was at Oregon and like they were in their prime, dude, that offense was so dynamic, so good in his 4-year stint at Oregon that I don't know. I feel like he kind of flies under the radar in a lot of people's minds. But to me, he's one of the best offensive coaches in the game.
Absolutely. He ran a very unique style, and I feel like he's done a good job adapting that style to the modern day, because a lot of it was the hurry up, no huddle, where he would do, I don't want to say abuse the rules, but he knew how to use the rules to his advantage.
He like invented the
spread
offense.
That kind of got patched.
Yeah.
That all kind of got patched due to like player safety, rest concerns, you know, that sort of stuff.
That's funny, yeah.
And he, but he still was able to adapt his offense, and he was able to use his success at Oregon to get him to head coaching jobs in the NFL. So like he knows what he's doing. So
I know. I'm jealous.
Probably have a great offense.
Northwestern in general, it's a team that like I get historically is not good, and like they're not, you know, great by any means like recently. But you look at like that program. They've been investing a ton of money into Northwestern over the last like 5 years. I believe they've got like some of the most expensive practice facilities in the country. They're getting a new stadium, I think next year maybe.
Yes, they had the new stadium on the way.
Like,
a nice stadium too.
I hate to say it because, like, that should be me. Gosh dang it! You know, much like how I feel about Indiana, but like, you can see that like a team like Northwestern, you normally don't take that seriously, is taking football seriously, and like that's interesting to see with just all the money being infused in the sport lately. That like a team like them can kind of, you know, put their foot forward in that regard.
That's kind of the beauty of NIL now, is that they can. You know, Northwestern has some very rich donors. If just a few of them care about football, like they can build up something great. It might take a little bit of time. Nobody's going to do it as fast as Indiana, and you're going to see pretty much every head coach of a program like Northwestern, Vandy, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to basically answer for why aren't you Kurt Cignetti?
Yeah.
But we cannot expect them to be. Just kind of get some stability, start getting some better players, get better facilities, just kind of keep investing in the program. Like if you have one great year, that's going to be enough to get the attention of mega donors really have it flow in. You have to get some momentum going.
Yeah, for sure. So good pick for them. I definitely think that Northwestern will be a team to keep an eye on just because of Chip Kelly in the coming years.
Let's move on just briefly, at least, to talk about the few remaining bowl games. We only have a few, so it won't take that long. We have Friday, January 2nd. The Lockheed Martin Armed Forces Bowl between Rice and Texas State. Lockheed Martin, so is this a military contractor that builds like stuff?
All your favorite bombs from them. Yeah. It's fun.
It just feels weird to have a bowl sponsor that's kind of what they produce is responsible for the deaths of people.
Yeah, well, you know, this is how we do it here, you know?
So it's, you know, whatever. It's what we do as America is we build these things and give them to other countries.
It's true. They got a decent website.
That is being played in Fort Worth, Texas, in TCU's stadium.
Yeah, typically doesn't like, I feel like Army or Navy or Air Force plays in the Armed Forces Bowl if they can. Maybe I'm making that up.
Or the Military Bowl.
Yeah, like one of those two. Maybe I might be making this up, but let's see. Now I'm going down the history here of the Armed Forces Bowl. It looks like it dates back actually to 2003. Back then it was called the Fort Worth Bowl. But yeah, in previous years we had Navy, Air Force, Army, a lot of Army actually. Looking down the Wikipedia article. So. Yeah. This will be a game of football. We have, interesting enough, 5-7 Rice is playing this one. I want to say them and Mississippi State, are they the only 5-7 teams playing?
There is at least one more I know. I believe it's not Kennesaw State, but there was another group of five teams. Appalachian State was also in there at 5-7.
Yeah. Yeah. This is kind of where we're at right now. Appalachian State is now 5-8. They
five
lost
and
to
eight.
Georgia Southern yesterday as it's recording. So.
Honestly, I'm fine with these 5-7 group of five teams. Just because you know they're happy to be there. Like these group of six players, they're not probably getting good P4, P2 looks. They're not going to go into the NFL. Like, it's a vacation for them. It's a chance to go on a trip with their friends, like, and go play a football game. Like, I kind of like that for them. Like, I would honestly kind of rather see them play in these games than demotivated Power 2 teams that are mad to be there.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, there's something about, like... I mean, kind of like the big thing people have been talking about with bowl games over the last few seasons is the whole idea of opt-outs. And so, like, you watch, you know, a good chunk of these, like, P2 games or whatever, and, like, literally, like, almost the entire starting lineup from the season is not playing. Like, people are either opting out or they've already
hit
the transfer portal.
I mean, on the other hand, you do get to see these backups that really want to
play. But that's good, though. Like, not that Wisconsin's been in a bowl game for the last 2 years, but it's always been fun to, like, see you know, who is the next running back that's going to theoretically be here next year? Like, how do the wide receivers look, right? What do our safeties look like next season? Like, it's a good preview. But I feel like, again, with the portal, it's like, I don't know how many of these guys end up actually staying. That is true.
And on the same token, you have to remember, like, just because it has the name of a bowl game, like, I'm not going to care about two group of six, 6 and 6.500 teams play each other in the regular season. I'm not going to care about them in bowl season. Like, I'm just being honest. You know, if it's on and there's nothing else to watch, you know, I could turn it.
Looking forward to it. I really am. I mean, tonight even we have some pretty good games, but this is like the kind of like this next 4-day stretch, let's say, is awesome. Like, there's nonstop college football on. Like, you can turn on ESPN, there will be a game on. And so, like, even if it's bad football, it's still football. That's how I see it.
That's very true. On 3:30 Friday, January 2nd, we have a more wholesome sponsor, the AutoZone Liberty Bowl.
Now, this
Navy and Cincinnati.
This one's interesting because for me, like, it'd be better if Liberty Mutual sponsored the Liberty Bowl. I don't know if that's possible.
I mean, I'm sure it's possible, but yeah.
It feels like a missed opportunity, especially because, like, I don't know for you, but, like, I feel like Liberty Mutual probably advertises more than any other insurance company, at least on my end here.
And I have never once considered using them.
No. Well, I don't think these insurance companies realize, like, I decided when I was 22 that I'm going to get Progressive insurance because, I don't know, like, I thought I needed insurance. I got a car for the first time. And I have not once thought about it since. I pay them the semi-annual fee automatically for my crappy 2009 Honda Civic. Like, I don't think about these things. Like, do people think about these things?
So I will say I actually switched insurance companies one time. I swapped from Geico to State Farm, and there's a reason, good reason for this.
Was it Jake?
What happened was I was in a couple of car accidents, and it skyrocketed my insurance rates. Oh. The grace period for State Farm was, I think, 3 years, and the grace period for Geico was about 5 years. So after 3 years, you know, I'm seeing my Geico rates are being quoted at something insane, like $300-something a month.
Oh my God.
While my State Farm rate was $50 a month.
Okay.
And I did that. Like, I quoted myself at various insurance companies. I'm like, okay, State Farm's giving me the best deal, the best grace period. But that was like, what, 8 years ago that I did that?
Mm-hmm.
And ever since then, I have not once thought about swapping from State Farm.
Well, I've got such
so
a
crappy
car. I think
a lot of their advertising is for people in my situation.
I guess, yeah. Like, for me, like,
and now I've bundled my home insurance.
Bundle and save,
yeah. I bought a home in that time.
If you have a really bad old car like I do, I think I pay, like, I want to say, like, less than $200 every half year for my insurance. Like, I don't even know why I bother at this point paying for the insurance. The car probably costs $500, if I'm being real. It's a complete clanker.
Have to have liability insurance.
It's true. It's for the other people, I guess. If, like, you damage someone else's car, is probably the biggest thing. But yeah, AutoZone, Liberty Bowl, I'll tune in. This could be a decent game. Navy and Cincinnati.
I'll tune into it as well.
This could be a decent
game. We also have, at 7 o'clock, Arizona, who is quietly 9-3 and ranked number 17, playing 8-4 SMU in the Trust and Will Holiday Bowl.
Well, we all know about the Holiday Bowl, but what is Trust and Will?
An estate planning.
Oh my. Create your will? Dude.
Okay, that's a depressing.
Yeah, we're thinking
I don't know about this one. Let's move on. At 7 o'clock, also, we have Wake Forest playing 5-7 Mississippi State in the Duke's Mayo Bowl, which is always a fun one. A lot of times they can overplay, like, the antics with, like, the Pop-Tarts and the Scooter's Coffee and all that stuff.
Yep.
But I liked seeing the announcers try to find different food items, being given different food items to try to dip in mayonnaise.
Yeah.
And just see them try not to act disgusted because, you know, they're paid to promote the product.
I've got several things to say about
this. They have to pretend to like it even though it looks vile. Like, no, the Uncrustable sandwich that was dipped in the mayonnaise when you're...
God, so bad, dude. Okay, quick trivia for you, Randy. Who was the first team to win the Duke's Mayo Bowl?
I have no idea. I don't even know how long it's been a thing.
I'll give you a hint. It started in 2020.
Oh, then that was South Carolina?
Nope. That was 2021. The first team was Wisconsin. We beat Wake Forest 42-28.
Did Paul Christ get dunked in mayo?
He didn't. Actually, the first person he had dunked was South Carolina, Shane Beamer. There's that great video where, like, they went to go take this huge bucket of mayonnaise over his head, but they hit him.
Thick, I could barely come out. Yeah,
they hit like that had to hurt because that has to weigh like 50 pounds, anyways. But no, I'll be honest.
On Monday,
I don't like. I'm just gonna say real quick, Randy. I don't like mayonnaise. Well, do you like mayonnaise?
That's okay. You don't have to. You know, I like mayonnaise.
Because, like, from my understanding, Duke's, is that like a Southern thing? Because I had never heard of Duke's prior to the Mayo Bowl.
I've never really thought about it. I mean, it's in Greenville, South Carolina, so I guess it is. Its popularity was at first largely limited to the South. Okay, fair enough. Well, I didn't realize it was just a Southern thing.
They've gone national ever since the Mayo Bowl, so it's really been good for their brand, I imagine.
I mean, it's good. It's especially the one that has olive oil in it, too. But there you go. I like it. All right. On Monday, January 5th, we have the FCS Championship game at 6:30. Illinois State playing Montana State. And this is very interesting because this was the first time in like over a decade that we didn't have either North Dakota State or North Dakota or like South Dakota State. Yeah, and even in the semis for the FCS. So we're kind of seeing some interesting things happen in the FCS. But I have to be honest about FCS football. You know, I actually used to really like watching the FCS playoffs. It was just entertaining. I feel like the quality in FCS has dropped significantly.
Really?
Because there's no real pathway for these players to get power four looks. Like, and there's just so much detriment to playing in the FCS versus playing in the bottom. Even a crappy group of five school where you could get a look, where you can get media attention. You have to get media attention. Because a lot of times we're seeing improvement in the group of six teams now. Because talented players that used to ride the bench will now go play at a group of six school for a year, maybe two, in order to try to get powerful looks. You can't show out to get that bag and secure that bag if you're riding the bench or if you're playing on a team where nobody knows that you're playing or sees that you're playing.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know. I'm trying to think now. Like, I feel like we used to have a lot more like FCS transfers.
We did. That's true.
But I can't think of any like recently that have come to mind, like big names or whatever. Because like we used to have JUCO guys all the time too, like you know, like a JUCO quarterback or something that comes in, lights it up in the power conferences. I don't know. Like for me though, like these FCS championships are like there are good FCS teams. Like I'd say like the top 10 or so FCS teams any given year are competent programs. You know, you think of like North Dakota State, like they've got NFL players, you know, every now and then on those teams. So they're not bad per se at like the highest level. So I don't know.
But are they going to continue to see that if they don't have the NIL money? Because they have so much fewer resources. Like people really underestimate what the resource gap is between even a group of five and an FCS team. So I remember Craig Bowl was a longtime North Dakota State head coach. Mm-hmm. And he won the multiple championships, but before he retired, five, 10 years before he retired, he decided to take the Wyoming job. And people were like, why? But then I looked up the salary difference, just the salary difference from him. He was making, what, $300,000 at North Dakota State? And at Wyoming, look it up real quick. He was making $2.3
million. Wow.
And started at $1.4 million.
Even at Wyoming, that's kind of crazy. Because, like, you
yeah, because a lot of it is TV contracts.
Right, that's a good point. Yeah, I wonder, because, like, in my mind, like, North Dakota State, like, that's an extremely legit program. Like, that's the most legit FCS squad out there.
But, okay, like, so I've got it here. let's see. So he made $400,000 his last year at North Dakota State. Mm-hmm. And his first year at Wyoming, he was making, $1.2 million.
Wow.
So $400,000 to $1.2 million. That is a massive jump in salary, and I do not blame him at all for taking those last few years to go to Wyoming, and he ended up around $2.2 million, it looks like.
Yeah, and you got to figure, like, these guys, like, for the players, too, I can only imagine, like, the NIL potential at a G5, like, even though it's probably not that much compared to, like, say, Power.
It is much bigger than an FCS.
It's got to be, like, non-existent in the FCS, I imagine, at least.
Like, I imagine North Dakota State has a big fan base in their area, and they probably have some NIL. Enough to pay maybe one or two players for real. But
most
FCS
teams aren't just going to have that kind of money, you know?
Right.
And, like, now that players expect to get paid, like, like, why would you pick an FCS school over a G6 school that can at least give you some money? Like, I think there was an argument to be made before NIL where, like, you should come to a school like North Dakota State because we have extremely good coaching. Like, we've got NFL players, despite being an FCS school. Like, come here and, like, develop and become a great player. But now it's just like, I think the kids just want the bag, you know, and I almost can't blame them.
And it's like, it's not like the, I mean, that argument could still work for some schools. Like, play for Saban. We had players take pay cuts to play for Saban because it's playing for Saban, right? You're going to get to the NFL if you play for Saban. You are so much more guaranteed to do that playing for him rather than taking a bag to play, you know, at Auburn or something. Sure. Like, it's just true. Like, I'm not even trying to trash talk anything there. It was just true. And players were willing to do that. They're not going to be willing to do that for North Dakota State.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a bummer.
Christian Watson. I hope something gets fixed with the FCS. Yeah. Speaking of fixing college football, you have a note in here. Jim Bogcast reminder, plan to fix college football.
Yeah, so I figured this is kind of a shorter episode, or at least, like, we don't have as much to preview because we already talked about the playoffs last week. I was thinking, Randy, I'm going to lay out my plan to save college football here. Do you have, like, 15 minutes for me to indulge in my plan?
Go for it. I do.
Okay, so, like, I did the math. If you were to take every school from all Power Four conferences, okay, so we're talking Big Ten, SEC, Big 12, ACC. All right, that gives you 68 teams. Add Notre Dame, you've got 69 very nice teams.
Nice.
Okay. Think of a world, if you will, where in the next 5-10 years, we're probably, like, I feel like what we have right now isn't that sustainable, and conferences are going to want more money and more power and whatnot. Think of a world where we pull an AFL-NFL merger, and these four conferences say, you know what, let's work together. Instead of having a 20-team Super League, let's have an 80-team Super League. Let's start with that premise. Do you think that's even in the realm of possibility?
I mean, we kind of already have that unofficially. Like, I mean, it's the NCAA. You know what I mean?
Well, I'm saying, though, like a hardcore, like a these teams, like, actually leave the NCAA. Like, I don't think, regardless, I don't think the current set of a structure is going to be here in 10 years. Like, I don't think we're going to see Alabama playing Georgia in the NCAA.
I don't think they're going to leave the NCAA, but I think they're going to be able to control the NCAA to achieve essentially the same thing. And the NCAA will be the Super League. I could see that happening.
So I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, I think the current structure, kind of the problem is that you have a situation where, like, teams like Alabama and Ohio State and Georgia play in the same, like, league as Kennesaw State and, you know, Ball State. And I don't mean that to disrespect them in any capacity. Like, I think it's great that we have a huge variety in talent and history in the sport. I'm talking purely in terms of TV contracts. I think that we're reaching a point where, like, a lot of these bigger schools don't want to support the smaller schools in terms of, like, ESPN money and whatnot being distributed. And so that's where I'm thinking, like, these four, like, the four power conferences might end up branching out and leaving the G5 effectively behind, save for maybe a handful of teams. Do you see that as a possibility?
I honestly don't. So I know, based on what Sankey has said, he's essentially said that he doesn't want to destroy the lower tier group of six teams. Like, he understands that they're important for the general landscape of college football, but there comes a point where it's just the resource differential is too big to say we're all in the same league. But on the same token, it's like, are we really supporting them? I don't think they're getting a whole lot of money from us. Like, they don't have that much money. They have their own conference deals. I think, if anything, we're going in kind of a different direction. And you kind of surprised me with this, so I'm trying to formulate my thoughts.
No, it's fine.
Okay,
yeah.
So if you remember, in the back in the old day, the Southwestern Conference, the reason it dissolved is because the conference itself got too big. They could not agree on anything, and it was just better for the conference to dissolve and make smaller conferences. I feel like we're getting to a point where I could see conferences just dissolving, and the top teams kind of in historic, more historic rivalries filtering to certain conferences, while we have, like, kind of a new middle tier of conference start to form. And we're sort of seeing that to a lesser degree with, like, there's a clear difference between the ACC and Big 12 compared to the SEC and Big 10, to which not just Power Four or Group of Six. It's going to be, like, Power Two, Middle Three, Middle Four, and then Group of Everybody Else.
Like, I agree, like, that is one path, and it does feel like we're heading that direction. I guess what I'm trying to get at is, like, if we reach a point where specifically, like, the like top 20 or so brands. I'm not going to say teams. I'm not going to say how good they are. I'm saying brands, purely based off of money. If the top 20 brands say, why is Oregon playing with Northwestern? Why is Alabama playing with South Carolina? If they all just merge together, right? And like we just had the top 20 brands form the Super League that's been rumored to be, you know, kind of happening behind the scenes for a few years now. I think that would kill college football. I think
it
that
would. And I think the powers that be kind of understand that every league, every professional sports league that's tried some sort of Super League sort of move, it's never worked. It never works. It always ends up hurting you way more than it would supposedly help you. Like, it's easy to see, look at how much money we bring in. Let's just cut off the dead weight. Mm-hmm. But it just, in a real life scenario that doesn't ever play out that way, the quote unquote dead weight is necessary
it to is. Keep
the health of the sport interesting. And I think they're smart enough to know that.
I hope so.
You're not really seeing big moves towards a Super League. It's more just like a rumored. The fans talk about it way more than you see any quote from any athletic director or conference
commissioner. Consider all the push that's been happening, and I can see it as a Big Ten guy. The Big Ten's been making this insane push for, like, we should have 4 automatic qualifiers every year. And, like, maybe the Big Ten and SEC get 4 playoff teams, and the ACC gets 2. Or, like, you know, like, these dumb metrics that are made up. Like, I think that to me suggests that, like, the powers that be, they're kind of trying like to vie for power in some capacity that I think is just really not healthy for the sport if they get their way.
I do see that from, I forgot the Big Ten commissioner's name. He has definitely proposed very unhealthy things. Sankey, I know he gets a lot of criticism, but to his credit, he's avoided making at least any public comments in support of that.
Okay.
I know we don't really like auto bids. We don't like having a certain number of auto bids per conference. We more like having at-larges and then being able to say, hey, our at-larges are better. This is why we want this many at-larges, because auto bids would cut in. Like, the reason we don't want auto bids is because having auto bids cuts into how many at-larges we would get if you just look at the rankings.
Yeah. No, I mean,
I look at, and you talk about scheduling, like Oregon playing Northwestern. You also have to take into consideration, these bigger schools want to have scheduling agreements with smaller schools because they don't want every single game on their schedule to be a potential loss.
Right.
Like, you see that a lot with Premier League teams in English football, soccer, whatever. Mm. They like to play some smaller clubs, and they pad their schedule with smaller clubs and games that can still be, I mean, you know who's going to win, but that's still interesting to see them play out. And they can kind of impact the standings because it also gives you a bar as to where how good your team actually is. Like, there is a lot of value to it, even if it's not just in terms of eyeballs on that one game, money generated by that one game. It contributes to the overall health of the sport. And I think most of the powers that be are smart enough to see that.
Okay. Well, in that case, I had a whole plan laid out to accommodate the doomsday scenario we're heading towards, but it seems like you've talked me off the bridge, Randy. I don't know.
Nice.
I will.
I think if anything happens, if any sort of quote unquote Super League happens, it's going to be basically what we have now, but these Power 2, especially Power 4 conferences, mm-hmm. have a lot more control over the NCAA, where it's going to be treated similar to how, like, you know, in the NFL, Roger Goodell speaks for the owners. In the NCAA, you really don't have that.
We need that, though. I think.
But exactly. We need that. We need somebody that represents the conferences and their wishes. And we don't have that. Like, the NCAA more works against them rather than works for them and tries to punish random people and have nonsensical rules. Or Roger Goodell, like, everybody knows, he speaks for the owners of the teams.
Yeah.
He does their bidding.
Yeah. My concern is it's a very weird power dynamic between, like, the whole idea of conferences, and then you go down to the actual schools and what those ADs want. I mean, we saw recently, and this peeves me, the idea that the Big Ten was going to get, like, billions of dollars invested in private equity from, like, Saudi Arabia or something.
Oh, God.
And, like, thank God, I guess Michigan and USC, I believe, were the schools that turned it down, which I'm just, like, embarrassed that my school didn't. But, like, I feel like this is where, like, having like someone in charge of the NCAA being like, no, we're not doing this. Like, you can't, we're not getting private equity investments like this.
The league needs a commissioner, really. Yes. I think a commissioner, an actual league commissioner for each NCAA sport, a commissioner for basketball, commissioner for football, sure, that, you know, is represented by the NCAA and is ultimately chosen by the schools, would save so much headache and actually fix a lot of problems.
Yeah. Because it is the Wild West right now. And like, there are a lot of like kind of conflicting.
The scheduling, the way everything is scheduled now, it's like terrible. The portal, transfer, when you can transfer, when you can portal, when you can talk to teams. There's no also, enforcement of any kind of dead period, quiet periods. Like, there's nobody actually enforcing this because the NCAA has no teeth. The reason the NCAA has no teeth is because every school knows that they have no say in what the NCAA does, ultimately. If they really have no say, so why are we going to respect them? This is not how we want it set up. If we could all get a commissioner for the sport, for each big major sport, basketball, baseball, football, mm-hmm, it would solve a lot of this headache, because then we could actually talk to somebody and we would have a lot more dialogue and communication to fix these problems.
I hate to say it, Randy, but I think Nick Saban should be the commissioner.
I agree. He would do a great job.
He would at least be like, I think he would establish the precedent. He's got at least 5 years left in him.
Yeah.
Not of life, but of like active peak Saban, like, you know, working 24 hours. Like, I trust him to, like, understand the landscape, both, like, the history and kind of where it's going and, you know, being able to adapt to it in a way that respects the tradition.
My one criticism of Saban, though, on this front is I just don't like his view on the group of six teams, where you can tell he's, like...
Got some choice words.
He doesn't want them to basically be in the same league or to pretend like we're on the same level playing field. And we're not. But I mean, in terms of like what opportunities they're given to play in certain games and what these games actually are. And I don't necessarily like that attitude from a commissioner.
Well, with that attitude, I always go back to this. Like, I understand that we talk so much crap about even like the ACC or the Big 12. I want those schools to be good. I want a world where, like, the G5 every year has a team or two that you look at, like UCF in 2017 or Boise State in 2007. You're like, that's a really good team that might even have a chance to win a few playoff games. Maybe not win at all, but, like, there should be a world where, like, the sport isn't just the top five or so brands. You know, we have variety.
In a world where these teams have the ability to build their program up over time and get to be the power.
The current structure's not that way, man. Like, with the transfer portal and whatnot, and just, like, it's got to be so hard for these schools to build something when, even if you get lucky and get good players and develop them, they're just going to leave for more money elsewhere, you know?
But I don't think that's luck, though. Okay, I'm going to go back to my point about the group of six, how the group of six is improving. I mean, a lot of it is simply the fact that they're going to have to find a way to make it work. I don't think it's necessarily an intrinsic back. Like, I don't think every resource needs to be equal in every sports league. Don't see it in any other sports league that works. They find ways to make it work. And we're seeing it in the sense of they now have an actual pitch to these potential great players. Don't go ride the bench at Oregon. Come start for us day one, and then you'll get a bag instead of make nothing to ride the bench for 3 years.
But it's hard to develop.
Like, that's just an example of way that they can compete in this league and be in the same league. And again, you see this in various, like, I think the Premier League is a great example of how you can have competitive clubs, mm-hmm, and competitive teams that don't all have the same resources. They find ways to make it work, and it's certainly more difficult when you don't just have infinite oil money to throw at the wall.
Right.
They have their own oil money. They're Saudi Arabian oil money versus Texas oil money, but you get the point.
I get the point, yeah. I don't know. I would hate a world where we end up losing again, even these lesser schools from the equation. Because I keep going back to it. Like, I feel like it could so easily be just the top 25 or so teams, and because they make 90% of the money, at least, I guess. Like, there are statistics on this of like the top 10% of schools account for like 90% of all eyes on TV, all like merchandise, all ticket sales, etc. Right, like. And I don't know, man. I'm just worried about the future of the sport. It's that time of year to be dooming about these things, you know?
I understand. We can now briefly talk about these playoff games. Just because we have already talked about them, given our picks. Mm-hmm. But because they're going to be, I guess, releasing this Wednesday. Is that when you're releasing?
It's going to be up before the games. I'm going to show that, folks.
Okay. 6:30 Wednesday. So I guess I'll say tonight, because that's when the day this will be released.
Yep.
We have Miami and Ohio State. The closer we get to this, okay, it's crazy. The closer we get to all of these games, the more I'm seeing the quote unquote underdogs of each game and saying they got a chance.
Okay. Okay. I know where you're going with this one down the line, but no. No. I'm saying no for Miami. Dude, I keep thinking back to that A&M game. Like, I get that they won, you know, hats off to them, but they look so bad. I think Ohio State is going to come out just absolutely mad.
We saw, all I'm going to say is we saw what Indiana's defense was able to do against Ohio State.
We did, but I don't think Miami, I don't think Miami has an offense that could score enough to beat Ohio State.
If Carson Beck can have a good game, I think, you know, all, who knows what's going to happen. I give Miami about a 25% chance.
Okay, that's reasonable. That's reasonable.
11 a.m. New Year's Day, we have Oregon taking on Texas Tech in the Capital One Orange Bowl. Mm-hmm. I'm sticking with my gut with Texas Tech. I think that was my lock of the week.
Mm-hmm. That was, yeah. I still kind of, God, my Big Ten bias is showing here. I guess I disagree, but I'll say this. I'm looking forward to this game probably more than any of the others. Because to me, Texas Tech is the biggest question mark of the playoffs so far. Is that fair to say?
I think that is very fair to say.
Like, I think the Big 12, again, it's like, we've crapped on the Big 12 all year, but like Texas Tech has dominated the Big 12. So I'm interested to see how that domination translates to a pretty good team in Oregon that I think can choke, but like is still pretty hard to beat. You know what I mean? Like Oregon, like I'm not expecting them to win the national championship, but the act of beating Oregon is still pretty impressive in my mind.
I'm not moving on to the Bama-Indiana game yet, but I just wanted to make this point. Alabama has, like, you've heard the phrase, defense wins championships. I feel like Alabama this year has never made that phrase look worse with how some of our games go. But I think in these situations, in this playoff situation, I think that phrase is going to prove true, very true. Because let's face it, if Oregon can't get an offensive rhythm going, which they kind of have to based on their play style, mm-hmm. then they could very much be in a lot of trouble. While Texas Tech doesn't need an offensive rhythm, quote unquote, to really win the game. And, you know, with Alabama, Indiana, now to kind of segue into that, I mean, I think it's the same situation where Alabama's defense is amazing. Indiana also has a great defense. But and it's like, I don't know how to speak for Indiana's offense, but for Alabama, our offense does not need any sort of rhythm. Like, we're not looking to get into a rhythm. We're just trying to play our playbook, make plays, and lean in our defense.
I think
that's going to bode very well in these very high-pressure games where the players are nervous. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to kind of just trust your instincts. And it's different. It's got a different higher-pressure vibe than a regular season game.
I think, yes, this game is going to have the highest, I think, pressure for both teams of any other playoff game. Being in the Rose Bowl, I think for Indiana, you have this immense pressure being the one seed. With Alabama, it's like the pressure to not lose more than anything, almost like the shame of losing to Indiana. Like, that's gonna be weighing on players' minds.
We wouldn't even feel shame about that. Indiana's a great team.
They're the
best team in the playoffs.
You know what I mean? But so this is my lock. Okay. Whoever scores first in this game wins. I don't think they trail. Whoever scores first controls the game. I think it's going to be that kind of a game where, like, it's going to be mental at a certain point. And if you can, like, establish dominance early on, the other school is just going to be, like, playing scared and nervous the rest of the game.
But that's the thing about both of these teams is I think both of these teams probably have some of the strongest mental fortitude in the playoffs. And, you know, people joke about Alabama, you know, but the thing is, like, the Oklahoma game, I think, is the perfect example of kind of Kalen DeBoer's mentality he's trying to impress upon the team, where it's like, it doesn't matter what happens, let the game come to you. Doesn't matter the stakes. It doesn't matter what people are saying about you. They know how much they were getting clowned on. They knew what everybody was saying about them. They knew what kind of, you know, what they were dealing with mentally going down 0-17 to then mentally come bounce back. I'm just saying, both of these teams, and Kurt Cignetti, he's obviously got a very strong, mentally tough team. Just that attitude of, you got to play the game. You got to go out and play the game and not think too much.
You play to win the game.
And I think that's why I don't necessarily subscribe to the idea that the team that scores first is going to hold on and win. But it could be true. I mean,
we'll see.
I think that would apply more to the Oregon-Texas Tech game than it would our game.
Interesting. Yeah, that game is weird, man, still. It feels like such a wild card. I think that game is going to be either
an absolute shootout or super low scoring and nothing in between?
Who knows? So I guess we'll find out. And the final game of the playoffs this round is going to be Ole Miss taking on Georgia in New Orleans in the Sugar Bowl. This is just going to be so interesting. I have no idea what to think of or make of this game. The regular season game was a classic where Ole Miss was winning by two scores in the fourth quarter. And I don't know what to make of it. I have no idea what to make of it.
As we get closer to it, I kind of like Ole Miss's odds more and more. I don't know. I keep thinking back to last season when Georgia just kind of like laid an egg against Notre Dame in the first round that they played. And like, I guess what I'm trying to say is like, I could very much see Kirby Smart and the company kind of looking ahead to Ohio State next week, sort of a thing. And maybe just like kind of assuming because Kiffin's not there and they already beat them. Like it's not, you know, it should be kind of a walk in the park. Like I'm oversimplifying, but you know what I mean? Like there's gotta be at least some level of that in the play.
I hate to say it, but I kind of tend to agree, even though that goes against Kirby Smart's MO completely, to never, you know, obviously not overlook a team, but kind of underestimate how intensely focused
how physical
they
it
have
could be.
To be.
Yeah.
How physical this game could be and will be.
Yeah.
And not and kind of getting punched more than they expect and being in a more, there's a, not necessarily in a close game in the fourth quarter. That's not what I'm talking about, but the physicality in the fourth quarter and how, I guess, how much they're expecting Ole Miss to remain with that same physical edge, strong, dominating, trying to dominate physical edge versus being in the fourth quarter and them trying to finesse their way to a win.
Right. That's not to discredit Georgia. Like, I very much could see Georgia winning this and winning the national title. Like, they're an incredible team. But I just, with Kirby Smart, like, obviously he had that amazing run of 2 years, the back-to-back natties. But, like, we've kind of seen them, I don't know, been like a little bit mediocre this time of year over the last couple of seasons. So I don't know. It's obviously hard. It's hard to win consistently, especially when you're playing good teams like this. So I guess we'll see.
I do have to point out, it looks like, Ole Miss gave up 115 rushing yards to Tulane. I don't know how much of that was in garbage time.
Probably a lot. Yeah.
But
they
dominated.
I don't know. They looked good.
I was gonna say they dominated. Like even taking away that it's Tulane, they did dominate the game. They never Tulane was quote unquote playing well, mistake free football and trying to be physical, but Ole Miss was just too much for them, and you could tell they were ready. Ole Miss was ready to play and motivated.
Like they're playing with house money. They're just like they have got nothing to lose. It's just like a big middle finger to Lane Kiffin at this point, and that's like a fun position to be in. You know what I mean? Because like no one expects them to win at all. So just go out there, have fun, play some ball. Like that's one thing that I kind of like about Ole Miss this year. It seems like they're the most fun team to watch this playoff run.
I just think it's crazy that you're seeing, of these eight teams remaining, I think you're seeing at least seven of them where you're like, yeah, they could win it all.
Yeah, the only one that...
Maybe six.
Yeah, the only one to me that like, no, there's no way, is probably Miami. Maybe Texas Tech.
I was going to say at least six, maybe seven of these teams, which I think is great for the sport as well, just to have this much parity now.
Yeah, no, playoffs have been, the 12-team playoffs so far, I will say, like, by the time it's gotten to this point, it's been pretty good. Last year, if you recall, there were some good upsets in the second round. Obviously, we had some really exciting games in the semifinals, so I've got pretty high expectations for...
And part of it, again, is this 12-team playoff creates parity because it's not just players are willing to go to different schools now, yada, yada. It's also teams are more willing to experiment and try things in the regular season that prepare them better for these moments to where they are going to have a better idea of what works, what doesn't work, what to run, what to get out of their team. Like, they're not just... you know, trying to play where they cannot make a mistake.
Yeah.
So I feel like a lot of times in the regular season, like especially in the 14 playoff, you're just trying to avoid screwing up so bad that you don't open up your playbook enough or don't experiment with enough things to really get a good idea of what's going to work and not work when push comes to shove in these types of games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this should be good. I think all four of these
games... I'm going to give you
a
prime example.
Yeah.
Prime example of a team that I feel like would have benefited greatly from a 12-team playoff from being able to experiment with those things.
Yeah.
2017 Wisconsin.
I knew you're going to go there.
But I have a point, though. You know I'm right, though, about that.
No, I know. That was a good team.
That was a really great team.
But imagine if the team knew they had a little bit of leeway to experiment and try different things with their offense and their playbook before they got to Ohio State.
I know. We could have had maybe a little bit more of like a passing threat, you know, Alex Hornibrook back in the day. I don't know. What I do know, though, this should be a fun handful of games here up ahead. Anything else, Randy, before we walk into the new year?
I believe that's all we have for this episode. Hopefully there's no turf malfunctions in the middle of a game this year.
Oh, my God. You're bringing up so many bets. I'm just going to say, if the turf thing didn't happen, like I think Wisconsin wins a national title. Look, dude,
you know what? I can see it.
Look at it. I think what happened was, wasn't it like we were going to score? Like something happened. It was at the goal line before Turf Guy came out there.
It was at the goal line where Wisconsin was about to score. I think you were winning at that point.
Oh my God.
Trying to remember.
I honestly, that's one of those games I cannot go back and watch. Like I get to, I distinctly remember that night having to leave my house and like walking around. I walked around for like 20 minutes outside while the game was on. I needed to calm down.
I feel like that has to be torture as a fan to see that happening.
Yep. No.
It's like you're just having to wait. And you know the more time that's given to Ohio State during this break, the more time they are, you know, on the sideline coming up with stuff while you're just kind of like, I don't know what we're going to run.
Yep.
Like you kind of know exactly what your team is. You know exactly what's going to be ran for your team, but you don't know what they're going to run. You don't know what they're growing up.
Yeah.
They're making all these adjustments. You know they have way more ability and room to make adjustments based on their type of players they have, et cetera. So it's got to be torturous as a fan to just have that happen. I'm sorry to bring that up, but I just think it's a good point about the general state of college football with the 12-team playoff.
It's a game of inches, folks. What can be said? All right, well, Randy, thank you for the episode, and thank you, fans of the show, for listening. It's been a great year for the Gym Podcast. We'll see you all in the year 2026. And until next time, as always, high tide.